Hello, everybody. It is the last Wednesday of the month, and we had a great Thanksgiving, which Steph and I will talk about later, what we did for our Thanksgivings. But anyway, Today, we're both excited, and hey, Steph, I just heard you say
hi.
Eat, so say hi.
How are you?
I'm just like taking over. Today, we're going to talk to Charles Clymer. And we're both really excited about that. And I've known Charles for a long time. I think probably since 2012. And so he's like Mr. Big Shot on Twitter. He's got all kinds of followers. Chelsea Clinton retweets him. And he's a very interesting character he's a writer. He identifies as genderqueer. And he also prefers the pronouns they and them, which I'm going to ask him about because I'm a Gen Xer. And I have questions. So anyway, without further ado, hello, Charles.
Hello. How's everyone doing today?
So good.
Excellent.
Kind of.
Excellent.
Aside from like the president completely freaking out.
Relative to the normal shenanigans that are ongoing.
Right. Yeah. Oh my God.
I say excellent in that we're speaking with you, and you know, it's been. I think I've been following you now for about a year. And I have to, I said it once before, but I'm going to say it again to everybody listening. You have been a source of inspiration. You have been a light on some very dark days for me. And I'm really, when Kimberly said, Charles Clymer's going to be on, I just thought, okay, great. Because this makes me feel better because this is normal. This is a guy who's got a great big voice. And anyway, so thank you for agreeing to do this.
I appreciate that. I was going to tell your listeners that you're lying at your ass right now about everything. I've been following Steph's work for a while, and we've been wanting to collaborate. She was writing a book a few years ago, and I was going to get on that. And then, you know, she had a project last year she wanted to do, and we came close to working together on that. So I'm really glad that I can finally be part of something with Kimberly, and it's really great to meet you, Steph. Finally,
hi.
I've heard a lot of good things about you.
Well,
so,
ah, okay. Yeah. Well, you know what? Why don't you tell everybody, Charles, a little about yourself, maybe a little about your background? There's so many things that we want to cover today. Hopefully, we'll get to them. But just, you know, tell us who you are and why you do what you do.
Sure. Well, I am Charles Clymer. I'm a writer. And I do a lot of social media stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure really the way to describe it, but I guess the closest way to describe it is social media strategist.
Yes. And activist.
I don't get paid for... you're very sweet. I don't get paid for what I do. I don't have a Patreon. I don't get sponsorships or anything like that. The money I make usually comes from, you know, my GI Bill, which is the thing that, you know, it used to pay for my... college education, and I get a small stipend from the Army for my medical retirement, and that's basically it. So everything I do online is me saying what I want to say when I want to say it, and people have responded, so that's kind of nice.
And I know you can't talk about it, but you've been teasing on your Facebook page that you're getting a new job. So I'm not going to try to force you to tell us what that is. But whatever it is, it seems you're very excited, and I'm very happy for you. I know you're going to be announcing it soon, and it's just killing me because I want you to tell me so badly. But
I want to know.
<we're> like, but you know, I'm only saying this because you made a Facebook post. So, you know, you'll be able to. You've signed your acceptance letter, so that's awesome. I'm really glad that, and I'm assuming that you'll be able to continue to talk about whatever you want to talk about. You got this job after you've been been a big mouth on social media. So clearly whoever has offered you a job knows who you are and knows what you have to say.
Oh yeah. They found out all about me. They they did all the research and they invited me in to interview for this position. And we had a long discussion and I brought up little things like, you know, I'm really hated by the far right for these reasons. They're like, that's great. That's what we want. I'm like, okay. So I can't say the position just because they have to draft a press release for next week, and it's gonna, you know, take a little bit to get that out. But I start December 11th, so I'm really excited about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we're going to hear.
Yeah.
And we'll toot your horn like crazy.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Can you do me a favor, Charles? I'm a little late to the party, I guess, but medical retirement from the Army, what happened? Were you wounded?
No, I didn't deploy. I spent 6 years in the Army. I was enlisted for 3.5 years. And then I went to West Point while I was on my active duty contract because I re-enlisted near the end of my first term of service for 6 years. So at the start of my second term of service for that 6 years, I got accepted to West Point, went there, and I got very sick. And I don't want to go into it. It was nothing illegal. I wasn't doing drugs or anything. But it's kind of hard to explain. And when I went through the medical process, the Army said, well, we're really sorry about this. And, you know, we want you to be an officer, but you can't for these disqualifying reasons. So we're going to pay you, and we're going to give you health care. I'm like, great. So it's a bit of a blessing. It's not a lot of money, but it's enough to, you know, pay a bill or two every month. So that's nice.
Great. Fantastic.
And I get free healthcare from the VA. All my healthcare comes from
really
the VA.
Great.
So that's nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And didn't you say online that you were writing a book?
Yes, I am. I am. When I've pitched it to people, I found that I kind of get a little circuitous because I'll start out in point A and I'll wind up at point Z before I know it. But my inspiration for this is that in the aftermath of the election, you know, there were all these articles about the East Coast and the West Coast and a lot of liberal areas being bubbles and that we need to do more to understand Trump voters. And, you know, there'd be these strange pieces where, you know, these journalists would go out and they'd interview like 10 Trump voters and they'd say, well, what's wrong? And, you know, the Trump voters would say something like, well, we're pissed that we're, you know, getting this type of wage or we're angry that those people, and they would usually use the phrase those people, meaning blacks and Latinos and people of color, are on welfare and still in our hard-earned money. Never mind that they themselves, too, are on welfare, right? So this kind of boiled over. And I got really pissed because I'm from Texas. And, you know, my father's side, his entire side is from Oklahoma and Texas, and my mother's side is from Kentucky. And going back generation after generation after generation, we're all basically poor white trash from the South. And so when I tell people that, they're a little surprised because I don't exactly have the most typical Southern dialect.
No, at all.
I don't. You know, people are always surprised to hear I'm from Texas or, you know, that I'm not from some East Coast boarding school or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know these people. I grew up around them. These are my people. And a lot of them are wonderful. They're really big-hearted. And a lot of them are not so wonderful, just like anywhere else. But the problem is that we don't hold them accountable. And so when we talk about bubbles, we always apply it to liberal areas. We apply it to, you know, New York and Chicago and LA. And there's this pervasive idea, especially in the South, that folks who live in New York and elsewhere have good lives. Like they, or that, I don't know, there's the resentment over class, basically. And so that somehow translates into the national discourse where we pit the good working hard folks, hard working good folks of the heartland against the elitist, effete, overly educated, professorial folks of the East Coast and West Coast. And so it becomes this thing of traditional good old American values versus you know, the crazy liberals who, you know, don't work hard and are entitled and don't have respect for themselves and each other, for each other and other people. So that's a long way of explaining that I'm here to destroy that fucking myth because I'm tired of it.
Good.
Yeah. You know, like I said, there are a lot of good folks in the South, but I want, basically this book is going to do three things. One, it's going to, you know, establish a sense of authority. I'm going to talk about my background, you know, being from the South, having a family that's deeply rooted in the South. You know, my military service, my, you know, my Christian faith, my whiteness, obviously, the male privilege that I have enjoyed. And I'm going to discuss the fact that these things are not the end-all and be-all of the American identity. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if we want to start winning elections, we have got to stop trying to reach out to Trump voters and placating their hateful fucking views.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because every time, you know, this happens, we have some, you know, and I don't want to be over critical of this, but, you know, there are politicians who will be like, well, yeah, let's go out and let's focus on economic issues. Let's just talk about bread and butter issues, mm-hmm. table issues.
Yeah.
We'll talk about minimum wage and health care, and that's it. And they say, you know, you'll bring up, well, you know, Black Americans experience poverty different from white Americans. And, you know, the queer community is undergoing things that are that's different from cisgender and heterosexual folks. And women encounter workplace issues that are wildly different from men. And when you bring these things up, they'll say, whoa, 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 look, we don't want to scare away voters. You know, we want to talk to middle America and convince them that the Democratic Party has their best interests at heart. And my point to that, and I'm right about that, or right about this, is that these folks don't give a fuck about economic issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's not what it's about for them. Economic insecurity was the big buzzword for Trump voters last
yes.
year. That's what the media kept saying over and over. And let me tell you, you know, these folks are pissed, but they have more allegiance to their craving for white rage mm-hmm. and male rage and Christian rage and heterosexual rage than they do any sort of notion about examining the candidates and figuring out which one has their best economic interests at heart. And so I want to completely dash that, you know, myth away. The third part is like, okay, Charles, but even if that's true, what do we do now? What's the solution? My solution is that instead of spending so much time and effort trying to reach out to people who don't give a fuck what we think, well, we should be reaching out to women, people of color, mm-hmm. the queer community, and moderates. Mm-hmm. And we should show them that they are as much a part of the Democratic Party and the liberal movement as anyone else, mm-hmm. and that identity issues should take precedence in that overall hierarchy of priorities. And so that's going to be the book.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, the fact when you look at, you know, half the population or however, whatever the number is, didn't vote at all.
Yeah.
It seems to me such a waste of time to try to win over some of these Trump voters who just don't care what you have to say. I mean, there was a Trump voter who I was friends with, and I used to hang out with her a long time ago in Los Angeles, and then, you know, she moved away. I think she lives in one of the Carolinas now. She moved away. We haven't seen each other in years, but we stayed friends on Facebook, and it turns out she voted for Trump, and I said, I can't even know you anymore because I don't understand. I said, if you voted for Romney, that would be one thing, but or even Ted Cruz, that would be one thing. But Trump is a whole nother story. And all she said back to me was, well, Hillary lies. And
good one.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's like there's nothing you can say to them. So why waste your time on them? There's all these people who don't even bother voting. And, you know, I mean, I have this whole, I'm just going to be real quick on this because I want to ask you a question about your gender. But, you know, I think that the Democratic Party would be well served to pair up with some Hollywood, you know, bigwigs who, you know, whether you fundraise or wherever the money has to come from, you get the money. But creating like a whole new, I don't know if you remember, you might be too young for this. But when I was a child, we had the, you know, I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill Schoolhouse Rock. And so you'd watch Saturday morning cartoons and you would get, you know, in between the cartoons, you'd get your Schoolhouse Rock and you'd learn a little bit about government. And it was something that not only children could learn from and enjoy because there were memorable, fun songs, but it's something that an adult could also watch. And I think that it would be so super awesome if the Democratic Party would create these kinds of online videos where they're fun and interesting for both children and adults, explaining civics and explaining how government works. If they just paired up with some Hollywood people who understood marketing and, you know, and how to make creative, interesting, whether it's an animated piece or, you know, whatever, if however they would figure it out, that you could put it online and just share it. And maybe it could go on the Sunday morning programs or whatever. But, you know, people in this country don't understand how our government works. And so, you know, the whole point is here reaching out to new voters.
I love that. I think that's a great idea.
I do too. You just gave me an idea. I'm going to.
Good. Well, you're the ideal lady. You know, I don't know if you know this, Charles, but last year Stephanie said to me, "Oh, you know, we should do a thing where we get people to donate it to Planned Parenthood in Mike Pence's name." And so we created a meme and it went crazy. And I mean, unfortunately some other people, somebody on Instagram got the credit for it, but it was Steph's idea. And
that was you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steph figured it out and I got the meme made and then I shared it all over my social media platforms. So that was the thing that really sparked it. And
God, I had no idea. I tweeted that. I donated and, you know, yep. Did all that stuff.
Thank
that was
you.
Stephanie's
it,
idea.
It's funny. I had to tap into Kimberly because she's got the, you know, the ginormous following. But I actually spoke to someone who was on the board at Planned Parenthood just a few months after we started that. And they were already up to like over 100,000 donations. I mean, it was crazy. It's millions of dollars at this point.
Well, and I think that Mila Kunis, is that her name? Mm-hmm. She does it every month or something. So look, mm-hmm. Stephanie, you're the idea woman. You're awesome. But let's go here. Now, I really want to ask you this because, and I don't want to come off as ignorant, although I kind of am ignorant. I don't want to be crude or rude or anything. I just don't understand. So explain to me, what is genderqueer?
Okay. So do you all know the difference between gender and sex?
No.
Okay.
Well, not. I don't think I understand it from your point of view.
Yeah, no problem. So sex is the thing that you're born with, right? It's your anatomy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a person with a penis is identified as male. A person who has a vagina is identified as a woman. And, you know, some folks might have something in between and, you know, but they might have to have corrective surgery as an infant to choose either one, right? Well, that's sex. That's tied to the anatomy that you have at birth.
Okay.
Gender is how you perform something. So, for example, right now in, you know, the room you're in or the little office area you're in, Robert, I assume, is not wearing a dress.
No.
Robert
not
is
today.
Probably wearing... Yeah, and I...
He's Bob, by the way. He's Bob.
Oh, Bob Seska. Okay. Sorry, Bob. But there's a, you know, and Bob could identify as genderqueer. I didn't know that. So I do apologize.
No, he doesn't.
If, you know. Okay. But,
he's
you
my
know,
main squeeze.
Oh, he's your main squeeze. Ooh, wow. That's nice. No, but Bob, you know, probably wears clothes that are traditionally associated with men.
Mm-hmm.
And he performs in a male way. You and Steph probably wear clothing that you usually identify with women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it may not always be that way, but, you know, from birth, we're given a set of behaviors and things that we're allowed to do as men and women. And it's called the binary, the gender binary.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Now, there are some folks who fall outside that, who want nothing to do with either one. Genderqueer means that you have an identity that is not exclusively masculine or exclusively feminine. You kind of fall somewhere in between. And so you perform in ways that are not totally male or totally female. And, I, you know, it took me a very long time to admit that about myself. You know, growing up, I wanted to dress like a girl and hang out with the girls and do things that, you know, were typically associated with girls, like babysitting. And, you know, I think I wanted to learn how to sew, just little things like that. I was on a cheerleading team in middle school.
Wow.
And, you know, those were, you know, the cheerleading team thing was a big no-no incident. That was kind of one of those things where in Central Texas, in a conservative environment, you're not really supposed to do that. So I kind of made waves, and then it was kind of my wake-up call that, oh, yeah, I could get my ass kicked for this. And so, you know, it's good to be safe about it. And so I started performing in ways that are associated with men. You know, I went out for the football team because I liked football, and I played football in eighth grade, and I played football in high school, and I lifted weights, and, you know, I never went fully into the coding that we associate with men, which is a whole nother conversation in itself. But I went through all the masculine rites of passage because I thought, if I just try to do it, if I just fake it until I make it, I'll be okay.
Hmm.
You know, I can be male.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had to, did you want to deny this female gender feeling that you had? And was it out of safety? Was it out of necessity? Were you ashamed of it? Cause, you know, I love that you're able to talk about it so easily and explain it. It's just so clear and it makes so much sense to me. But were you trying to sort of fight this and identify with the male because you didn't feel safe?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was on, you know, I would have, you know, I mean, even now, to be honest with you, there are moments when, you know, it gets hard and I would give anything to be a cisgender person, a typical, you know, strapping young man who is just kind of interested in masculine things, and that's it. I have moments like that because it's just hard. It's really
mm-hmm.
hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not just issues of safety. It is an issue of comfortability with the people around
yeah.
you.
Yeah. If I may. So I have a son who's a middle schooler. He's in eighth grade, and we live in a pretty liberal area in Oakland, California, and people are accepting. One of the main reasons why I wanted to live here with my family is because I'm a Mexican American, and I always felt like in a white world that I didn't belong, and there was a lot of shame around that growing up. Now it's like, you know, I've got my fist in the power shape, like pretty much just from the moment I opened my eyes in the morning. Like I couldn't be more proud, and we're raising our kids to be really proud of their ethnic diversity because there's a lot of it. But so my son has a best friend who he's known since he was four. She was always identified as a little girl up until very recently, and she confided in him last year that she was non-binary, and she calls herself gender fluid and is now has changed her name to, it's her middle name, which is non-gender specific. It's not a girl name. It's not a boy name. And we refer to them as they now. And I love that they felt safe enough to talk to a close friend, and that close friend being my son helped them sort of navigate. And now everybody, it is what it is. And this is their generation, right? This is different from our generation or your generation. Perhaps my generation is probably a whole generation beyond you. But nonetheless, there's a sense of ease about them now, and a real, you know, comfortability, the kind that you perhaps didn't have or maybe still don't have. And I wonder if it's easier for women by sex who then make this gender choice to be fluid. Or non-specific. I wonder if it's easier for men. I mean, for women than it is for men who then come out as non-binary, as you have.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Well, first of all, I just want to applaud you for, you know, not backing down in the face of white supremacy and, you know, teaching your kids to be proud of themselves. And, you know, you're Mexican-American and you have a heritage and that should be celebrated. And I also just want to thank you for being a safe space for this kid. It's very rare to come across someone who gets it. It's very rare to come across someone who gets it in traditional environments, not necessarily even conservative, but traditional environments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in the progressive movement, I'll meet someone my age who should know these things because they operate in these spaces a lot. And I will avoid them. Or I will avoid talking about the issue. Like they'll use the wrong pronouns and I just won't correct them because there's, you know, it's a lot of effort and, you know, there are folks my age even now who are kind of indignant about it. They don't understand it and they don't want to understand it. So well, what I want does, to when, thank you for that.
When you say that you prefer the pronouns they and them, can you explain why? And I'm asking you, basically, I can only imagine what chicks on the right would have to say about this. So I don't know if you follow them. They've banned me from every possible place they could because I argue with them. But, you know, and they certainly have a lot of opinions about this. So I'd like, you know, and I frankly don't know the answer. So I want to know from your mouth, why those pronouns?
You know, for years I lived under a strictly male identity, and I wasn't able to kind of relate to this far more feminine side of me that I kind of had to hide away. Pronouns are a way to acknowledge that identity and to kind of signal to the world, like, oh, by the way, you know, Charles has more fluid identity. You know, if you are more into masculine things, Charles may not be so much into those things. Mm-hmm. If you're more into feminine things, you know, invite Charles along to do those mm-hmm. things. You know, there, you know, even in progressive community, there are spaces for, you know, non-binary folks where, you know, we're invited to be a part of that atmosphere and kind of be validated in our identity. And so pronouns are like, they're like a hat you wear, so that people can understand better understand the person you are.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I hid this part of myself until I was 27, and I finally came out when I was 27 and started talking about this more. And it's been a long process. It doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, even now, you know, people who I consider friends will, you know, kind of. Forget that, and they'll maybe not treat me in the way that I would like to be treated mm-hmm. with regard to the genderqueer identity, and I have to, you know, gently remind them, and then they get it, and they're like, oh yeah, that's right, so sorry about that. Yeah.
Well, I just would ask that if I ever do something wrong to gently remind me, because it's certainly not out of stubbornness and wanting to insist my way is right. It's just, you know, sometimes new identities and new ways of talking to and about other people take a while to sink in when you're used to it in one particular way. You know, obviously, yeah. I know there are people out there who want to stubbornly hold on to things. And my whole thing is, you know, I mean, there was Patton Oswalt, the comic, said something in one of his stand-up routines about, you know, I think he was addressing a huge group of people, not one in particular, but whether it was members of the LGBTQ community and, or whatever, like, give us some time. Like, I'm there for you. I want to say all the right things, but I don't always know them. And, you know, and I'll learn them. But, you know, like, for instance, I've noticed because I'm not going to say which pages they are, but I run several different feminist pages. And the thing that really bothers me is there are, like, one time, Sam Wardy, who runs Liberals Unite, wrote an article about a girl who had this really high IQ, and he called her a gypsy. And oh my God, the anger that was coming from everybody, because I guess they're not called gypsies, they're called Romas. And but I had no idea, neither did he. You know, I mean, I never thought of gypsy as a derogatory term. Other than the fact that, I mean, I remember that there were women who would be in the mall in California. I used to work in like so many different malls. So there were, I don't know how to describe it. I guess they were Romas and they had a particular look and they would always do the same thing. And they would always come up to me and they would be in their groups and they would almost put their hands in like a praying, like they were holding their hands as if they were praying, and they wanted to either give me a psychic reading or they were asking for money or whatever it was that they were doing. And I always just thought of them as gypsies. And it wasn't even something that I would have said to insult anyone. It was just how I understood that's what they're called. And then I learned after this article was posted on one of these pages that gypsy was not the correct term. It's like, fine, then I have no problem using the term Roma. But the problem that I had was the freaking anger and pitchforks coming out from people on that page as if we were purposely trying to be hurtful. And that was certainly not the case. You know, it's like I want to be accurate and I want to be correct. And I come from a certain generation. I'm the Gen X generation where feminism is slightly different than millennial feminism. It's just slightly. I mean, in the end, to me, feminism is feminism. You know, you have it's the equality, period. It's gender equality. No matter how you identify, whether you're a male or female, it's gender equality. But I also know that there's social feminism. And so that's always going to kind of be different and change with generations. And I definitely want to be able to keep up with that. And I want to say the right things. I'm not always going to say the right things because I don't know always the latest lingo or phrases or whatever. And I don't want to be, and I'm not saying you would do it. I'm just saying that I don't want to be yelled at if I get it wrong, because it's never something that I'm being thoughtless. It's something that I'm kind of ignorant and I don't know. So I'm just voicing a frustration that I see, you know, people on the internet get so angry without realizing that sometimes these things are not coming out of stubbornness and not wanting to let go. It's just, we just don't know yet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have the whole story yet.
That's a lot. That's a lot to unpack. You know, first of all, I will say that you are not alone in that frustration. I think a lot of people feel that way right now. We're going through a lot of growing pains as a society.
Yes, we are.
And folks get really upset over progress that they feel should have been made already, and it hasn't been made. And I can't help but sympathize with them because, you know, in many ways, I kind of feel this a similar frustration, not the same frustration, but a similar one. Mm-hmm. What I think is important, you know, and I, by the way, I don't know what it means to, I don't think allyship has a perfect definition. I think, you know, it's something that, if there is a perfect aspect to allyship, it's just listening and being ready to apologize when you make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Those are the two big things that are required to be, I guess, a quote unquote good ally. One thing that I try to do is I try to look at it from where the other person's coming from. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, women will talk about being sexually harassed on the street, which is an awful behavior. I think it should be criminal to a large extent. You know, I think that we should be putting a lot more resources into ensuring that women feel safe wherever they are, safe and respected and treated, you know, in the way that their male counterparts are treated. With that same level of dignity. But there are men in this country who have not got the fucking lesson yet. And, you know, there are some men who might have good intentions, but they think that it's perfectly fine to go up to a woman and just start talking that game in the street, right?
Yeah.
And it's not fair, it's not right, and it should not be allowed. It should be called out. But it's similar to all these other things because, you know, for example, I had this one guy who's a friend of mine who, you know, we've been friends for a long time and I hadn't talked to him in years. We recently reunited and started catching up. And he's like, yeah, I've seen your writing. And, you know, here's my question. Sometimes I'll be in a cafe and there's a woman at a table and she's reading and I want to go up to her and just strike up a conversation because she's attractive and I want to ask her out. You know, how can I do that? And my answer is you don't. Mm-hmm. You don't do that because, you know, she is clearly, you know, doing her own thing. Maybe she would like it, maybe she wouldn't, but you have no idea either way. And there's a chance that woman has had about 5 or 6 other men that day walk up to her and try to flirt with her. And so even if, you know, you're the kind of guy who walks up and says, excuse me, I don't want to bother you, but I just want to say that I saw you from across the room over my latte, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit, just to get to know you better. Now, if I took that sentence out of context, it sounds very polite. Mm-hmm. But if it's the 7th time you're hearing it that day, you might be a little fucking annoyed.
Yeah.
And you might be liable.
Or the first time.
You're right. Because the first time follows days and months and years and sometimes decades of hearing the same thing from men who don't get boundaries. And I'm going somewhere with this. So, you know, you look at this woman, this theoretical woman who is basically every woman. And you might say, well, look, I was polite to her. I went up to her and I said, you know, a very nice thing. And I was being a nice guy. And she just bit my head off, even though I approached her in a very polite way.
Yeah.
But you're not considering the fact that you're the 1,000th,
right,
10,000th guy to do this and not respect her boundaries. And so it's very easy to call her an asshole or, you know, some kind of
a bitch.
Mm-hmm. Other pejorative, yeah. Right? Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to label her that way and say that you did everything right. And it's much harder to understand where she's coming from and why you should have been more thoughtful instead of approaching it,
yeah,
that way. So
absolutely.
To go to your example, you know, you or Sam referred to this person as, and I'm not going to say the word because I'm not sure if I'm allowed to, but... You know, he referred to that person the way he did, the Roma. He referred to her in another way. And people got upset.
Yeah.
But they got upset because they feel like white people are not listening.
Exactly.
They feel like white people
are
full of good. Well, let me finish. I know you do. Because you have a good heart and you put effort into these things. And so I know it's not done with malice at all. And it wasn't done with malice on Sam's part. But instead of getting defensive, instead of saying these people are really crazy and they're irate and they're getting pissy for no reason, try to understand where they're coming from and just, you know, write a post saying, look, you know, I fucked up. I'm so sorry. If I had known that word had, you know, such a hurtful context, I would never have used it. And really, I probably should have done more research before I wrote what I wrote, to make sure that the language I was using was more inclusive. And I guarantee you, if you take that approach, people will meet you halfway. They'll be like, yeah, you're right. Yeah,
well, right.
But well, we're
and
really
that,
glad
and you know what? I believe in that instance, we did something like that. And, you know, I often try to figure out, because I think that I can understand where people, I don't want to say people like that, but I mean, where those people are coming from, just because I'm a woman and I'm constantly having to battle the, you know, like for instance, today, somebody who I know, and I'm not going to be really specific, but somebody who I know posted an article about Matt Lauer getting fired, and then and then somebody came onto his thread and said, "Penis plus social standing equals death." So basically, they think that now it's this crazy baseless witch hunt, and you know, all the women are angry, and men can't do anything, and you know, and it's like, oh, it just made me so angry. But that's the thing. It's like, I actually chose to not say anything to this one person. I did go and say something on Twitter in a general sense, but I understand what it's like to be misunderstood. I understand what it's like to be constantly told by men that I don't understand things or they explain things to me. So I do have a certain, and then I also have the understanding that because I run social media Facebook pages that are high profile, not with my name on them, but feminist pages, you know, there's always going to be, a certain amount of people who are just pissed off, and it does. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the Roma situation, anything, whatever. If a liberal gets something either wrong, or even if they don't get something wrong, if they have a slightly different way of looking at it, then there's going to be a certain amount of defensive people coming and yelling, you know, I mean, for instance, I posted an article on one of these feminist pages the other day, and I got an email from somebody who had a problem with it because, you know, it was just some article I found on the internet. It certainly wasn't associated with the Facebook page. So it was from a completely different website. And I guess it was about Mormon religion and something having to do with underage girls. And I don't know. I can't remember exactly what it was. But I guess this website showed a picture of a younger girl. So somebody messaged the feminist Facebook page and just started... you know, I mean, right yelling. They were so angry, and they were saying, you have to be careful. You shouldn't post those pictures and blah, blah, blah. And so I said, you know, as nicely as I possibly could, I just said, you know, this site is not associated with our Facebook page. This is just an article that I found and I posted it. You might want to talk to, you know, you might want to send a message to the actual website. And then the response, and I did everything I could, because I read those messages and they're sarcastic and angry. So my natural reaction is to be sarcastic and angry back. And it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be calm. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. This is not our website. You know, we just posted it. And then so when this person replied, she's like, well, what's, she's like, well, then what's the web or whatever. It was this like kind of defensive attitude. And I see that. And I agree with you where when we make mistakes, we have to own them and try to figure out how we can all meet at a place where we get along and we're like, okay, yes, we all understand each other now and we're all kind of happy. So I am often willing, I'm not saying I always because I'm not perfect, but I am often willing to make that meet in the middle. And sometimes I find that, you know, people on social media are so quick to get angry. You know, it'd be one thing go ahead.
No, I mean that, and some people don't want to meet in the middle.
Right.
And we can't spend all of our time trying, like, just to go back to what Charles started saying about the premise of his book. Uh-huh. If we spent all of our time trying to make some of these folks meet us in the middle, we'd just be spinning our wheels forever. Let's go, we can own our, we own our fuck ups. Like I tell my kids all the time, you're like, oops, I fucked up. Well, sometimes I don't say fucked up, but listen, guys. Not proud of the way I behaved there. My apologies. You know what? Moving forward, yeah. I'm gonna make every effort to have it be different. So you made an apology. If people aren't willing to accept it, they're not gonna meet you in the middle. We move forward and we talk to the people who are like-minded. And yeah. I think, you know, yeah.
And you know, saying all of this, I think there's a difference in veering off so much on what we were originally gonna talk about. But I think that online correspondence is kind of like, it can be like road rage, right? Like where if you're in the grocery store and somebody hits you with their shopping cart, what do you usually do? Go, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. But if you're in the car and someone cuts you off, well, then that person needs to die and hear every scream, you know, like you scream profanity and you just turn into this I mean, I've done it a million times. I get so angry when I'm in the car and scream profanity, you know, in my little safe space in my car. But the reaction is kind of similar online because you're at home, you're in your comfortable space. And so you react emotionally and sometimes in an angry way because you don't have somebody right in front of you to keep you from doing that. Like when it's a one-on-one, I think it's a little bit easier to just have a talk, you know, it's like, look, we're misunderstanding each other. Let's talk. And that seems to be an easier way to do it.
So you know, it's an interesting thing. Over the last several years, there have been studies that have come out that say that women who deal with medical personnel and especially doctors and people of color, especially Black folks who deal with doctors, have reported that when they talk to them about their levels of pain, they're told that they're not sucking it up enough or that they're not doing enough to overcome that pain because these doctors, instead of listening to them, will assume that, either that they're not, you know, being adult enough or that they're whining. It's interesting. I think in the progressive community, we have a really tough time in understanding that there are different levels of pain. And we kind of assume that if we were going through someone's experience, we would deal with this amount of pain when we have no idea what that person's going through. Last year at DC Pride, this past summer at the DC Pride parade, the entire thing was ground to a halt. Because these folks came and, lodged a protest right in the middle of it, because they felt that, you know, some of the corporate sponsorship was really problematic and that people of color were not sufficiently represented. And, you know, so we sat there for like, I don't know, I want to say, I could be exaggerating here, but I want to say it was like 2.5 hours of just, you know, the entire parade standing in place while we figured out how to negotiate or whatever the hell. And there were a lot of people who were pissed, like, you know, God damn it. You know, this is one day when the queer community can come together and, you know, celebrate, you know, who we are and what we do and yada, yada, yada. And why are these people ruining this day? You know, and I didn't hear a single person around me take the time to say, you know, I wonder why they're doing what they do. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it has any relevance. People want to be heard.
Yeah.
And they want their pain to be understood. And what I think in the progressive community is that far too often we have a habit of assuming that we know what people are going through when we have no fucking clue what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And men do this with women in the progressive community. White people do this with people of color. You know, straight and cisgender folks will do this with the queer community. Atheists do this with, you know, Muslims and Hindus and Jewish folks. And so we want to feel like we're woke, so to speak. And I don't, you know, usually use that word because I kind of think it's cringy, but I think that progressives with privilege, white people, men, Christians, etc., we want to feel like we understand other people and what they're going through and feel like we're good progressives. And instead of just trying to understand these people better by listening, mm-hmm. we really suck at listening. Progressives, honestly, overall, we really could be better at listening.
And
because we compare it to conservatives, we think conservatives are the worst at listening, so we're good by comparison.
Exactly.
But that's the thing.
Yeah, we have to stop doing that. We have to stop.
But it still blows.
Yeah,
it still blows. You know, I hate it. You know, it really gets frustrating when you're trying to do the right thing and someone calls out some shit that you're not doing right. I know. It really is just, you know, I get it all the time online. I have over 100,000 followers, and sometimes I'll tweet something and someone will send me a message saying, hey, this thing you said was not above board mm-hmm. and it was offensive for this reason. And there used to be a time when I would get offended and they'd be like, well, look, you know, I'm trying my best here and you're not trying to acknowledge the good things I'm doing. And I, honestly, I look back at myself from then. I think, God, what an asshole.
Right. And I think, I didn't even, wait, let me finish.
I'm going somewhere. I didn't even try to listen to that person. I didn't try to understand where they were coming from. And, you know, I tried to kind of better myself and getting better at receiving a message that might offend me, that might piss me off, but trying to understand the context of it.
Yeah.
And so I think we could all do a lot better at that.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I would just add to that, and I'm including myself in this, and it's something that I constantly struggle with, is having that emotional knee-jerk reaction when somebody doesn't understand, let's say, my point of view. And I really do try, at least on my Facebook page, when somebody comes along and has something to say that offends me, I try not to be sarcastic. I don't always succeed with this, and sometimes I do choose to be sarcastic. But there are certain people that I will debate with that I would like to just reply to them in a way that isn't coming from that defensive manner. And, you know, because I understand that there is a conversation, like, for instance, it's very frustrating to me, and we never even got to this, and soon we're going to have to end, but it's been a fascinating conversation. But like talking about the Equal Rights Amendment, when I first really became aware and understood what it was that it never was enshrined into the Constitution and why it's needed, when I would post about it online, I would get so many, mostly men, some women, mostly men, explaining to me why we don't need it. And every single reason they came up with, it never has any weight when you really explore it. But to them, in their mind, they're just dead set. Oh, well, we've got the 14th Amendment and that's enough because it declares that all men are created equal or whatever. That's not what it says, but that's, you know, kind of like the gist of it, or all humans or all persons are created equal, or however they specify it in there. But when you get down to the nitty gritty, it's not protecting anybody against gender discrimination. And, so, you know, when I'm arguing with people or debating with people online, I try very hard to be calm, but I wish that sometimes more people would, you know, it's like, aside from the people who are making the mistakes, to acknowledge their mistake and understand, I'd also wish a little bit more people who were, you know, just reading what others have to say, instead of just going for that knee-jerk angry reaction, even if it is the 1,000th person they've heard it from, because I think if you come at somebody with an angry, but you're not doing this my way, then it's like, I used to be an actor and I did this thing called, it was the Meisner technique, where you do repetition. And so basically you're sitting there back and forth and somebody says something and then you repeat it. And then it's this kind of conversation and you're basically just going off of their energy. So if they're coming at you with anger, then your automatic reaction is defense. So, it puts you in a defensive mode and then you double down on your, even if you're wrong. You double down because you feel like, how dare you? So it's like, I try to recognize that, you know, and I try to be calm. And I just, I wish that would happen a little bit more. Sometimes I do see it happening, but, you know, that's just whoever's listening to this. When you're on social media, it's like, it sometimes, I mean, sometimes sarcasm is great, and sometimes you know you're dealing with a troll, so it's either best to just ignore them or bat them around for a while and then block them. But, you know, for those genuine people who are lacking the understanding of what you're trying to say or whatever it is, instead of just screaming at each other, to just have the conversation, you know, please think about what you're saying. This is hurtful because, instead of just, you're horrible.
I totally
you know nothing.
That totally makes sense. I try to be graceful. So, you know, when people don't use the right pronouns for me, I get a little annoyed, but I also understand that they're a little confused or they forgot. And, you know, I most of the time I let it go because it's not worth the energy in trying to explain to them.
Yeah.
But sometimes I will engage in a conversation. I'll say, hey, just so you know, I didn't mean any harm, but my pronouns are they, them. And, you know, most of the time they get that and they'll do it the right way moving forward. Some people do not have my experience. You know, they're non-binary folks who go through hell every day. And when someone misgenders them, it's enough to send them into a rage. And it should. Yeah. They have every right to feel the way they do. White straight men are the worst at listening. They are. Because, you know, the privilege that white straight cisgender men hold kind of insulates them from any kind of confusion over identity. But the thing about folks in the progressive community is that if you lack a certain privilege, often I see people who lack a certain privilege feel like that gives them license to forget other people who lack privilege. Mm-hmm. You know, you see white feminists, for example, who will not listen to women of color and their concerns regarding feminist issues. You'll see gay white men who will say sexist things because they think that their sexuality is the same as being a woman, and it's not.
Right, yeah. That just you'll happened see, the other day.
You'll see, you know, folks of all stripes who still are not doing the fucking effort in understanding where non-binary and transgender folks are coming from. You know, and even in this conversation, you know, you two are lovely and you are doing such good work, and I'm so honored to be here today. But, you know, you both have misgendered me, even after we talked about that earlier in the conversation. And that's okay. That's okay, because people make mistakes. You know, it happens. But I think that we could all do a better job of listening and making an effort.
Damn it!
Well, and I
but
also
people
I
fuck
think,
up. That's yeah. the thing. People fuck up. Everyone fucks up, and you know.
And it's also what you're used to.
Oswald is right.
Right, yeah. And it's like it's kind of like what your habit is. You just like fall back on your habits, and then you have to remind yourself. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
It's muscle memory. Yes. You know, you got to get better.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Well, we're opening. You know what though? With my son's best friend. I've known them since they were four. And sometimes I slip.
Yeah.
And sometimes I use, and then I always catch myself and I go, oh, and they say, it's okay. You're just getting used to it.
Right.
I know you don't mean any harm.
That's how I respond.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they say, I know you don't mean any harm. And I'm like, I'm glad. And you know, I love you. And it's all, I'll get my shit together and I'll get used to it. And then that muscle memory will be that you are they, and they are laughing at me at this moment, but it's a good natured laugh and they know right. that it's all coming from a place of love. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
exactly.
Anyhow.
Well, I think we've kind of gone over the time, and unfortunately I had all these things that we might have been able to talk about, but this was a fascinating conversation and I'm really glad that we had an opportunity.
Well, let's do another hour. you know, soon. Yeah, I'll come back and we can talk about the political issues.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, thank
yes,
you, Charles.
Indeed.
Thank you, Charles. Let me
thank
just
thank you.
Let me
it was
just...
wonderful to be here.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
And don't forget, Stephanie and I are going to joining in another thing in just a second. But before we go, you can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. You can pledge a dollar. You can do $5 to hear and another thing. That's our show after the free show. Or you could pledge anything you want, right, Stephanie?
You know it.
Support them.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you, Charles. Come back.
Thank you.
People love people, so why should it be?